Now, maybe you know the answer to my next question, Wesley, and that is, in the United States, when a person files for a patent application, sometimes the patent review process takes 3, 4, 5 years, and as such, there are people who were, at the time a patent was about to be officially worked on, would go make a change in the patent and then start the process all over. And these were called submarine patents. And a person would go on this way for 20 years, hoping that somebody would also use the technique, and because he had prior filings, he would suddenly come up with his submarine, so to speak, sue the person, and collect a whole lot of money. And this was not a fair process. To get around the submarine patenting problem, what the U.S. Patent Office did was to say that if the patent application does not become acted upon within, I think it's 1 year, the patent application becomes public domain. So a person who files a patent within 1 year, even though his patent doesn't become granted, doesn't become approved, within 1 year you can read the details of his patent application. Is there a similar, since this man has filed for a patent, is there a similar process in the country in which he filed for the patent, if you know? N2XJN, K2RIW.
In 1988, I filed a patent application in Poland. Now, here's the, what is happening. That's what you described. It looks for me like provisional patent application in the United States. When you have a 1 year period of time. Now, I need your help also to understand how it's in here. I have filed for my entity patent for a resonance acoustical profiling. We've got a patent. But in Europe, the first day you send the papers to the patent office, and at the same very day you can, based on the date of sending, not the based on receiving date, you can show all of the secrets of that patent. It's still yours, even though that wasn't physically issued. Back to you, sir.
Yes, I've been told that in the case of Europe, that if you reveal your invention before the patent application has been, I thought it was filed, you said mailed, minor difference, so filed or mailed, if you reveal before filing, it becomes public domain in Europe. In the United States, you can reveal before filing, but you start a 1 year clock. And if at the end of the year, after you first reveal your invention, if you haven't filed for it, you no longer can file. It then becomes public domain. So we have a 1 year grace period on revelation. I understand?
Okay.
Okay. Looks like somebody's going to be joining us on this one. My understanding is that we have a 1 year grace period on revelation of the invention versus filing for it, and you can still possess it. If someone about to check in and give us more information on this, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Maybe not, I thought so. So, in Europe, you've got to make sure you file first before you reveal. In the United States, you've got a 1 year grace period. That's my understanding, Wes. N2XJN, K2RIW.
Yeah, you're right on the money, unless something changed. In Europe, you cannot say till you file. You can show something not explaining how it works. Yes, you have rights to do it. But when explained to do it, you're done. You have no rights to your invention. It's a public domain. N2XJN.
Now, by way of him already filing, now, the one thing I don't know about Europe is there a way that a person can go to the patent office or the website of the patent office and read his patent application? In the United States, after I think it's approximately 1 year from the date of filing, I can read his patent application. I know what he is claiming to be his invention, even though it hasn't yet been granted as a patent. Is there a similar rule that you know about in Europe? In other words, if you wanted to read this man's patent application. Do you think we have the ability to do that? Over to you, Wes.
Well, I don't think so. In Europe, you have a regions, that means a region of Russia, ruled by its own rules. The region of Poland and all of the former Soviet Union that right now is the United Europe is another set of rules. But the people from the countries that are not in European Union, they have a full right to file the patent application in Europe, United Europe, and have a protection for it. There is an international organization, I don't recall the name of it, that is qualifying. That means you send the paperwork for them, you get a qualifying for the patent, but you don't get a physical patent. And they issue to you based on the search and the information available that, yes, this is it, and this is how it works, and we sign for that. I don't know if such organizations in here, in the United States. Back to you.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I have any more knowledge about the U.S. system. I know that they're making continuous changes, and every so often when I go to a meeting of the IEEE Long Island Consultants Network, a number of the patent attorneys are members of that organization, and they keep us informed as to what are the latest changes in the way the U.S. Patent Office does their business. And there's been a fair number of changes in the last few years, but one of the biggest changes were the modifications to get rid of these submarine patents because they were becoming very offensive. People were taking unfair advantage of the system, if you know what I mean.
Not that.
So I guess you've heard stories of submarine patents before now. Is that the true, Wes?
Yes, I've heard about them, but there was a surprise 3 years ago. I was working on a project, remote gun, sniper gun, which was a gun with no scopes at all, and it was a gun that was in different location than the sniper, and the target was in third location. And the sniper gun was able to shoot in the middle of the quarter from 50 feet. Actually, it was even more, but let's say 50 feet. Now, it was a basic triangulation used by German during the Second World War with addition of gyroscope. I don't have to have a secret right now. As when I turned into the Mr. Fitzpatrick, who was my patent attorney from the EIC when I was filing for the resonance acoustical profiling, he stated to me, let me jump, it is your choice, but for me it looks like, yes, you have a chance to have a patent on it, but the paperwork is going to lie in the office for 3 years and nobody is going to even look at it, because it does have a military application. Now, if the military decides that they don't have to, they don't want to use it, then you're going to be held for 12 years with the ability to extend it for another 12 years. Now, of course, you can sue military for the damages, and you have a full right to do it. And the only compensation that you're going to get is when you win or when they use that technology. So I decided I'm 55, that time was 53, I'm going to drop it. And apart from that, I'm a peaceful man. Yeah, it was just interesting how you can use the triangulation, how can you take the Cartesian geometry, and then based on that, you say, no, it's not working. Then you change to Euclidean geometry because it's a sphere. And then you realize all you need is just a vertical. Let me drop. If you have a vertical, then you have all of the puzzle done. I remember that there were two universities that I turned to, and in one of them I've met a mathematician, a PhD, who was helping me to do the mathematics for it. And then he said, well, I don't know what it is that you're doing, but it's interesting. So I was so delighted at that time that it is interesting. And how do you make a perfect vertical? Very easy. You take the spin, and you spin it, and then all of a sudden you see that the spin is vertical till it has a friction on it, till it has a rotation. So gyroscope. With a gyroscope you get a vertical, then vertical to horizontal is 90 degrees. So now you have something that is steady, and all the rest is just a triangulation. And then it gives you the ability to send the signal to the gun to direct to the proper location and to exchange.
When you said that the gyroscope eventually becomes vertical, does that mean by some means the gyroscope is hanging against gravity and it eventually finds a pure vertical against the gravity? Is that what you were saying?
Anything that has a circular rotation has a tendency to keep at 90 degrees to the ground. That's your reference point. Now, when you have a sphere and you slide the sphere on the slices, horizontal slices, you can have as many slices as you have, and you look from the top to this particular slice, all you see is the circle. Now you can have in this circle as many triangles as you want, as many different geometrical structures as you want. But then, the sum of the slices gives you a tri-dimensional visualization. So from that standpoint, if you have the aircraft which has a gun, and the aircraft is that gun, and the sniper is on the ground, and the target is on the ground, the triangulation has a space because has a sense because it does not have a strict dimension. Everything is with the speed of light. And to exchange.
Interesting. I have to think about that one some more. I think you've got a question, John, that didn't get a chance to get asked on the antenna, if I understand you correctly. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
N2LDY query. KC2WGB. I think I'm going to hold that question until next week. I know you have to go. I just want to remind you, if you do get a chance to work with that capacitor, across the terminals I had a 75-ohm resistor. That was the input from the generator, and the scope was connected to the two wires, and the frequency was 4 megahertz.
Another question that we didn't hear the answer from you, they gave you, be so kind. How come non-polarized capax capacitor that is fully enclosed into the metal enclosure is able to respond in this scenario? And to achieve.
Oh, that's one hell of a mystery right now. Donald, N2LDY, I think you said you had a question. Go ahead, Donald.
Thank you. Just a real quick question. I should jot it down. When on Sundays does this net start?
Since 1982. Don't worry. I know it sounds like a derogatory remark. Since 1982, it has always started at 8 o'clock on Sunday night. Back to you, Don.
Yeah, okay, that's great. I'll just make a note of it, you know, and maybe I'll... Yeah, I've been listening for a while here, and it's interesting. All right, thanks a lot, guys. I know you guys are getting ready to check out soon, so I'll say 73s and have a wonderful evening, I'll be on the side listening until it ends.
What was that again, John? We should remind somebody?
Remind them about the amateur website, that he could listen to all the technets back in 5 years.
Six years. Don, the last 6 years of this technical net, 4 hours per Sunday, are all recorded and most of them are documented, and you can read them back by going to the website www.amateurradio.tv, amateurradio.tangovictor. You go there, and you'll see 6 solid years of TechNet, something like 1,500 hours worth of recordings. Need a fill on that one, Don?
Yeah, I can't write it down right now. I'm actually out in the hot tub as usual here. But I'll try and remember. And I don't know. Well, if you can, maybe you could just fire off an email. It's my email is n2ldy@juno.com. It's pretty simple. All right, thanks a lot, guys, and have a good night.
Dick, one quick question, because I had a question about the reflection bridge, and we didn't go into that. We went to similar stuff.
Yeah, Don, when it comes to remembering it, you're now talking on amateur radio, and you know what television is. Just combine the two words, amateurradio.television, amateurradio.tv. And there's various ways that you can Google it and find it. Go ahead with your Vizwire question, Wes. N2XJN, K2LIW.
I remember your words about half a year ago that there is some kind of magic that spectrum, the network analyzer is able to see one port even though that physically represents two. So there is a generator and there is a receiver part. Now, unfortunately, even though that I have one full vector network analyzer and the other one is a gain phase analyzer, which will allow me actually to do a similar task, it does not have a Smith chart. I need something like a reflection bridge, which is two ports, and then it goes to one. That reflection bridge is sometimes called VSWR bridge, and there is a site that is maintained by November 2, Papa Kilo, that he shows the easy way to make such a bridge for vector network analyzer. By the way, he made a beautiful vector network analyzer by himself, a beautiful one. And I would like to hear more about it. There is something that is being called RF bridge, which is model number 86205A, which is Agilent Technologies, and there are various of numbers of the bridges on eBay. The problem with them that I have is some of them say 8 gigahertz to 18 gigahertz, and this is by Wiltron. The other one says 3 megahertz to 50 megahertz VSWR bridge. But there is a one that is made by Hewlett-Packard that goes from 2 megahertz to 18 gigahertz. I'm kind of confused about the internal structure of that, but to you.
When it comes to determining the impedance of an unknown circuit, there's quite a large number of ways of doing it. One way of doing it is to set up something that is a little bit like a Wheatstone bridge, where you have 4 arms to the Wheatstone bridge. 2 of the arms, you could call them as just normalizing arms. The 3rd arm is the unknown arm, and the 4th arm is the reference arm. And when you adjust the resistive and reactive component on the reference arm, the bridge will become nulled. So a Wheatstone bridge, you tune for a null, and when you do that, your reference arm now equals your unknown that's on, connected on the other arm. And since your reference arm has got dials where you can read the resistive component and the reactive component, that's one way of doing it. And so there's all kinds of noise bridges, Wheatstone bridges, RX bridges, and so on, that most of them tune for a null. That's one method of operation. Let me drop. Another method of operation, and this really dates back to the days of the Letcher wire, the slotted line, and now the network analyzer, is based on the assumption that if the load on the end of the transmission line, assuming now just to be simple, I'm going to talk about a 50-ohm transmission line. If the load on the transmission line is a pure 50-ohm resistor at your frequency of measurement, then all the power that goes down that line gets absorbed by that load. None of it comes back, and it's a little bit like a Wheatstone bridge that's been nulled, so to speak. However, if the load on the end of that 50-ohm transmission line is anything besides a pure 50-ohm resistor, if it's 51 ohms or 49 ohms, if it's 50 ohms but it's got 1 ohm of capacitive reactance, and that capacitive reactance could be in shunt or in series, whatever, if it is anything else, the laws of physics say that not all of the power going down that transmission line gets absorbed. Let me drop. Once you know the magnitude of the standing wave ratio that that particular load creates, it tells you how far it is away from a pure 50-ohm resistor. Standing wave ratio really is reflected power ratio. Of the 1 watt you sent down the line, if 0 watts come back, it's a known pure 50-ohm resistor. If you get 1 milliwatt back out of the 1 watt that you sent down, a 1,000-to-1 power ratio, which is roughly a 33-to-1 voltage ratio, you know you've got something very close to 1.01 standing wave ratio. However, the magnitude of the reflected power tells you how bad it is. The phase angle of the reflected power tells you not only how bad, but exactly what. The phase angle is something that you plot on a Smith chart, and once you plot it, in other words, it's got a certain phase angle, the Smith chart really is a polar plot. If you didn't put the normal grid, it's an ordinary polar piece of graph paper where the amount of reflected signal is the voltage that goes from the center dot toward the perimeter. If you had a perfect short circuit, your reflected voltage would be unity. Your arrow would go from the center all the way out to the perimeter. If the reflected voltage is 1/10, then you're going to go 1/10 that distance. And the phase angle of the reflected signal tells you whether or not you make that arrow go to 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and so on. Once you know the phase angle of the reflection and the magnitude of that arrow, you stop, you pick off the grid that was the ordinary polar graph grid, and you lay on top of it a Smith chart grid. And now off the Smith chart grid,
repeater, timeout, cancel.
Off the Smith chart grid, you now read the exact amount of resistance and the exact amount of reactance. And you can lay a grid on top that tells you a series equivalent circuit, or you lay another Smith chart grid, which is the inverted Smith chart, and you can make an equivalent circuit that's a shunt resistor and a shunt reactance. So, reflected power and reflected phase angle tells you everything you want to know about that load at that frequency. Now, how do you measure reflected power? In my opinion, the best way to measure reflected power is with something that can differentiate between the forward flowing power and the reverse flowing power. You can do that with a circulator. You can do that with a directional coupler. You can do that with a bridge. You can do it with a whole lot of things. My favorite way is a directional coupler. A directional coupler is something that's very misunderstood, but once it's understood, it does magic. But it's very inexpensive. You can easily make it out of pieces of sheet metal, if you know what I mean. With a pair of scissors, you can make a very good directional coupler. And even if the directional coupler you make is not good enough, if you're smart enough, with very simple procedures, at least at one frequency at a time, you can tune it to make it perfect at your frequency. So you can make your directional coupler with a little bit of care. Let me drop. You could, with some care, make a directional coupler that has 50 decibels of directivity. That means in the forward mode, it reflects, it responds to nothing but the forward signal. In the reverse mode, it responds to nothing but the reverse signal, except a little bit of the forward signal will leak into that third port. But if you've got 50 dB of directivity, that leakage is 50 decibels down. It gives you the ability to fairly accurately measure an extremely good dummy load, or a unknown load, that has a 50 decibel reflection coefficient. So most network analyzers, right behind that front panel, are a bunch of directional couplers that looks at the forward going signal and the reverse going signal. And the directional couplers that are in the network analyzer, you would like to think if the network analyzer works between 10 megacycles and 18 gigahertz, and some of them do, you would like to think it's an extremely high performance set of directional couplers that work from 10 megacycles to 18 gigahertz. Absolutely not. Let me drop. To make a high quality directional coupler that has 50, 60, or 70 decibels of directivity, and to make it operate from 10 megs to 18 gigs, I won't say it's impossible, but you could spend a lifetime doing that, and it would be a very big piece of hardware. And Hewlett-Packard, who invented many of the techniques on network analyzers way back in the 1960s, decided that that's not the right approach. They decided they'd get the biggest bang for the dollar by making ordinary directional couplers, yucky directional couplers, mediocre performance, and some frequency ranges the directional coupler has poor performance. At some of those frequencies, the directional coupler has 7 dB of directivity, 10 dB of directivity. You want it to be 70, and you got 7 dB of directivity. However, with the so-called 12-point correction procedure, as long as you can make a very high-quality 50-ohm dummy load, as long as you can make a very high-quality short circuit, and as long as you can make a very high-quality open circuit, those three things, a short, an open, and a termination, as long as you can make them with high quality, and you connect them to the ports of your network analyzer and go through the 12-point calibration procedure. There's a microprocessor in there that's doing a mountain of work, doing all millions of calculations at every frequency you hop to. But once it calibrates, it knows the exact amount of error in amplitude and phase at every frequency. It knows the amount of error of its internal directional couplers. So in logic, it has made directional couplers so good, 70 dB of directivity, it would take you a lifetime of work to build... It would take you a lifetime of work to build a directional coupler that good. They didn't do it. They did it in logic. Very smart. As long as you got a good network analyzer, as long as you got a good microprocessor in there with the right 12-point calibration and correction procedure, and that's a very well-written program. As long as you've got that program and a microprocessor that operates fast enough, it'll do all that work for you in real time. And it flashes those swept response across that screen 30 times per second. You don't even see any flicker. As you make changes in the load, because you're tuning it, you're operating variable capacitors and variable resistors, and you're pushing pieces of copper tape, and you're pushing your finger into the circuit, you're doing all kinds of things on the circuit, and you watch the screen. And everything changes on the screen accurately in real time, as far as a human being is concerned. Everything on the screen is 30 milliseconds old. You're looking at 30 frames per second on the screen, but it's so fast it doesn't flicker. As far as the human eye is concerned, it's real time. So it's like a blind man walking up a hill. Even though he's blind and he can't see the hill, the tilt of his feet tell him which way is uphill. You watch that screen of a modern-day network analyzer doing the 12-point correction procedure, and you're tuning your circuit, and you know immediately when you're going in the right direction because the information is on that screen 30 milliseconds later. And my goodness, can you save time. What used to be a month's worth of work in tuning circuits with a slotted line and perfecting some load across some frequency range, with a modern-day network analyzer, you can do that in 10 minutes. What used to take you a month. N2XJN, K2RIW.
Thank you very much for all of this information. That's what I see. I see two types of devices. One has three legs, which one of them is the HF output, I mean RF output, RF input, and the device under test. That would be my antenna with my coaxial cable. Let's say Now, then I see, and this is Voltron 69A50. Voltron 69A50. Then I see another device, which is ANZAC, ANZAC, and the model number is Romeo Bravo -3-50. And this is VSWR bridge. Now this one has a five legs, which one is the input, the other one is output, the other one is device under test, and the other one is 50 ohm resistor. So it looks like that from in you have a internal structure of two resistors, left and right, and then these two resistors are connected to left and right connectors, and then they are connected to the coil that goes across of them. Let me jump. So it looks like we have a star from the beginning where in is at the corner of that, then we have a resistor left and right, and then at the end of the left and right resistor we have a coil with the center top grounded. Then on the output we have another coil that is next to that coil with one end grounded and the other one going to the output. One, two, three, four. I'm sorry, we have a not five legs, we have a four legs. So my question is, in the air, does the three legs represent a directional coupler, and do you can you comment on the four legs device? Back to you.
Every real directional coupler has four ports to it. It's got the so-called straight-through line, and it's got the coupled line. And the straight-through line and the coupled line are usually coupled over a length that is very close to a quarter wavelength strip line material that's being used with the velocity factor. So you get the best coupling at a quarter wavelength. Doesn't have to be quarter, but that's where you get the best coupling and the flattest response. But you can use it at much, much shorter with the right kind of a cowl procedure. So there's four ports of a directional coupler. One is the input connector going to the straight-through line, and on the other end of the straight-through line is the output connector where you put the unknown load. The coupled line, which lies parallel for a quarter of a wavelength, has an output line, output connector, and a termination connector. In some cases, the four-port directional coupler has the fourth port very well terminated with a good 50-ohm resistor on the inside so that you don't see the fourth port. You only see three of them. So there are directional couplers with an internal termination, which is really a four-port device, but you only see three of them. And in some cases, you can open it up and see the fourth port, if you know what I mean. That's a single directional coupler. Let me drop. You could put into the same box a dual directional coupler. You make the straight-through line twice as long. On the first quarter wave, you put a directional coupler that senses forward power. A little bit further down the line on the straight-through line, you put another overlapping section, another directional coupler, that looks at reverse power. That's a dual directional coupler. He now looks at the ratio of forward power to reverse power, and those two numbers immediately give you standing wave ratio. Start measuring phase angles between the two and properly process the data, and now you've got exact impedance of the unknown. What I just described now is a six-port device. It's a directional coupler, which normally has four ports for the input side, another two ports for the output side, and they share the same straight-through line. That's a six-port device. Depending on how many of the each coupled line, each directional coupled line, has a 50-ohm termination on one end and the output connector on the other end. So it's really a six-port device that I'm describing. It could look like a four-port device because they have supplied the two internal 50-ohm terminations, or they could let you supply them. There's another kind of device which is a four-port directional coupler, where they do not give you the termination on the inside. They let you supply the termination on the outside. So you've got the straight-through line, you've got the coupled line, you've got a total of four ports. If the nearest port to the input you use as the output, and the nearest port on the coupled line, and the furthest port from the input,
repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
If on the furthest port from the input connector, on the coupled line, you put a termination there, you now have a input sensitive, directional coupler looking at forward power. All directional couplers fire in the reverse direction, opposite of common sense. I've got a straight through piece of strip line, and alongside of it, I've got a quarter wavelength long coupled piece of strip line, very close. You would think the signal flowing forward on the straight through line would couple some signal over to the coupled line, and you think it would also be in the forward direction. Oh, Mother Nature's got a surprise for you. It fires in the reverse direction. So if the input coupled straight through line is firing from east to west, the coupled line has signal flowing from west to east, east to west, west to east, opposite direction. It's called a counter-directional coupler. Okay? Once you know that, on the coupled line, you can decide where you put the 50-ohm termination and which you use as the output. In one way of using it, you're looking at forward power. In the other way of using it, by reversing the 50-ohm termination and the output connector, you're looking at reverse power. You're looking at reflected power. Now, if you're smart enough, you put a 50-ohm impedance detector on each of those connectors on the coupled line. You've got two separate detectors. Each detector presents a pure 50-ohm load, if you've got a good design, and yet they're detecting the power. Now you're looking on a single directional coupler with four total ports, but you're getting all the information at once. Forward power, reverse power, and if those detectors are a sampling detector, which is a kind of a synchronous demodulator, they're not only measuring the amount of power at that port, they're measuring the phase angle.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
So with that kind of a device, with a good design, with just four ports, all the information comes out of one. So there's a lot of ways of doing it, as you can tell. Dual directional coupler, a pair of directional couplers one after the other, or if you're smart enough, you can do it all in one single directional coupler. That last design I described, it's more difficult to do it that way, but it can be done that way, and I think some of the network analyzers do that.
Yes, I have in hand right now the coaxial directional coupler made for military for NARDA. That's a treasure for $10. And this one has three ports. One is input. One on the side is minus 10 dB. And the other one, I assume, is the output. Now, this has three ports. It is rated for 3.7 to 8.3 gigahertz. And if you could comment on that, and also how low I can go with that. Can I go with that to 500 kilocycles and to exit?
The answer is yes. If you go to that article that's on the Roadrunners Microwave Group, K5RMG, Roadrunners Microwave Group, and you go to that article written by K2RIW on directional couplers, it'll tell you exactly how to do that. Even though it's rated from 3 to 8 gigahertz, you can use it all the way down to DC. It becomes less and less sensitive, but you can do it, and you can calibrate it, even though the front panel doesn't tell you that. What's in that NARDA, and I guarantee it's a blue package with a red label on the front. That's the way NARDA is.
Correct.
That's the way NARDA makes their packages. You put your ohm meter between the input connector and the output connector, center conductor, you'll measure 0 ohms. It's a straight through line. Measure from either of those connectors, center conductor to ground, you'll measure infinity. The third connector, the one that says minus 10, you put your ohm meter between center conductor and ground, you will measure 50 ohms. You're looking through the directional line, the coupled line, into the internal 50-ohm resistor. So there's an internal 50-ohm resistor. That's a minus 10 dB coupler. And now that whole Don Blue package, you hook it up to your circuit in one particular configuration, you will be sensing forward power. Disconnect two of those connectors, the input and output connector, pick the thing up, flip it upside down, and reconnect it, and now you're measuring reverse power. So it is a directional coupler. It will sense forward power and essentially ignore reverse power when you hook it up in configuration number one, flip it upside down, and it'll measure reverse power and essentially ignore forward power.
In other words, the generator from the vector network analyzer I'm connecting to one port, the receiver to another port, and to the tooth port, which would be minus 10 dB, I'm connecting antenna.
If you have a vector network analyzer, you do not need external couplers.
That doesn't work. I don't know how to use it with one port. It does have, hold on. It does have, it is R3754B. Output 1, output 2. Output 2 is connected to input R. Then I have input A and input B. Back to you.
I understood nothing of the last conversation. The previous one, you have the three-port device. You normally hook that between a signal generator. Yes, you could use a vector network analyzer as a signal generator, but you hook it between a signal generator and a load, and on that thing, on the port that's labeled minus 10 dB, you put that into some kind of a detecting device. It could be a spectrum analyzer, it could be a power meter, and it could, in some cases, be a vector network analyzer, the second port. But when you use the directional coupler, all you need is a signal generator, the load, and some method of reading the power that's on that minus 10 dB labeled port.
What I was telling you is, I was trying to apply that to vector network analyzer because that's what I didn't understand. On vector analyzer, I have the output 1, output 2, input R, input A, and input B. Now, normally, I have input R connected to output 2. I'm connecting my two leads, which one goes to output 1, and then, let's say, input A. One of them is the receiver, and the other one is the generator of the vector network analyzer. What I was thinking to do is connect one port and the second port of the three-port device and the third-port device used to the device on the test.
I think you're asking me, can you use the NARDA directional coupler as some of the interconnects on this network analyzer? And the answer is, I do not know. The earlier versions of network analyzer gave you a whole bunch of ports on the output panel, on the front panel. They gave you a whole bunch of connectors for the individual internal terminations, the internal detecting devices, the synchronous demodulators. They give you all kinds of stuff, and it was a lot more difficult to use, and I'm not familiar with those machines. The more modern vector network analyzers have port number 1 and port number 2, and that is all.
5 years old, maybe 6 years old, and it's a pretty goddamn good machine. It's you know, all of the possible features.
Okay. Without a doubt, it's got a lot of adaptability, but it's got a lot more complicated procedure, and I have not used that kind. The network analyzer that I've used, you have port number 1, which is usually put into a device that you're testing that has an input connector and an output connector. And the input connector goes to port number 1 of the network analyzer. The output connector of the device being tested goes to port number 2 of the network analyzer. And that's all you've got to do on the modern network analyzer. All of that other jazz is handled automatically internally. The earlier network analyzers gave you separate ports for terminations and detectors and methods of coupling and whatever, and maybe they were a little bit more adaptable, but they were a lot more difficult to use. You needed a computer science degree to properly hook the damn thing up, and so you're going to have to work a lot harder with that kind. I'm not as familiar with those. I'm sorry to say, Wesley. Go ahead.
You're perfectly right. It does have output 1, output 2, input R, input A, input B, probe 1, prompt 2. Yes, so much stuff. But I like it. It is alive. When I compare this to the 4194A impedance gain phase analyzer from Philip Packard, this one is a movie, although it's a beautiful piece of the equipment. The advantage wiggles in front of my eyes. I know that you're not impressed with it because you have much newer device, but, you know, that's what I was able to acquire and to exhibit.
Dick, do you have a model number of the one you prefer?
I'm afraid to tell you because the John I know will go out and buy it.
Absolutely.
My favorite one is a... I'll get you the model number tomorrow because the damn thing's in front of me every day, but I don't... The crazy model numbers on Roden Schwartz are a whole bunch of alphanumerics that don't make any sense to me at first. The one I use most goes from 10 megs to 8 gigs, and it's going to cost you some money. I'm a little bit afraid to tell you, but my goodness, I have used that essentially every single day of my life since 2002. I used to start off hating network analyzers because the ones that were available to me are like a little bit like some of the ones that Wesley is describing to me right now. All kinds of crazy connections are required. And Rode has really made it a lot more simple with this particular machine. And I think I've told you before that this machine, I can calibrate it in February, don't turn it off, and in October, it is still calibrated. That thing, I don't know how the hell they did that. Agilent can't compose, Hewlett Packard can't compose in that particular characteristic.
Is that a vector network?
Yay, verily. It is a vector network analyzer, and we've got the two-port version. Somewhere else in our laboratory, we've got a four-port version, which is three times as expensive, and you need that extra function 1% of the time. So, in my opinion, it's not cost-effective. The ordinary two-port version, boy, that thing does magic. Once you properly know how to use it, it's got a little bit of a learning curve. They all do. But wow, what a machine. I've got to leave you guys. Be kind to each other. 73 you all. This was TechNet number 1355. I know we put Mel to sleep by now. He's got to get his duty rest. He's not up this late. But just for the hell of it, I'll pass it over to him just in case he's there. K2KEY if you're there. K2RIW in the TechNet. Yeah, I kind of thought so. He's got to get his beauty sleep, and so do I. I should have left you guys some time ago. We'll pick up next week, and we'll try to solve some of these problems. Bye-bye, you all. Keep your eyes to be clear.
Okay, Dick. Thank you very much. Greatness tonight. Thank Mel Zhu, but not after KC2WGB.
Thank you very much, all of you, guys. And Dick, again. You dedicated so much heart and so much time for us. Thank you. And to XJN. John, can you go to 147?
Si, senor. KC2WGB, QSY, 147.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
The time is 1 a.m. 73 and good night from the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. The time is 1:23 a.m. 73 and good night from the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL amateur radio repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30. WQVL repeater system. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Set tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
W2HCP Mobile.
KB1LQN Mobile.
KB1LQN, W2HCP Mobile.
Good morning, WQB. That's all right. I didn't quite catch it. KB1LQN. Name is Steve on mobile up here on 287 by the Sydney Purchase area.
Okay, KB2LQN, yeah. Whiskey 2, Hotel, Charlie,
Bravo,
Bubble. Currently westbound on Sawyer's Highway on Long Island. Headed into the Freedom Tower job in Lower Manhattan.
Sir, thank you, sir.
It's a job. Yep, run around with fixing construction equipment. That's one job. Lots of aggravation. Boils the blood sometimes, but you gotta do what you gotta do. How was your weekend there? Did you participate in field day?
No, negative. I'm on the road, my brother and I. Went down to a little place called Cooksville, Tennessee. I kind of picked up a repeater. We bought a repeater and some equipment. We didn't buy it. We're picking it up for a friend of ours up there in Rocky Hill.
Okay, roger that. So you did a marathon mobile run there. Nice. Marathon run back and forth, right? Been there, done it. Yeah, it was a good weekend. Definitely a good weekend. Couldn't have ordered more perfect weather.
Just letting our sponsor do its thing there. Yeah, it rained off and on the trip down there. Coming back last night, ran into some heavy rain. I don't think a fire truck could have poured more water that heavy.
Yeah, no, I had that this past Friday. The Friday before, I had the rain like that. It was ridiculous. It got to the point I wound up pulling the service truck over and waiting about a half hour for it to lighten up. So you went and picked up a repeater, huh? Anything big and fancy, or just a plain old plain Jane repeater?
Somewhat of a plain Jane repeater. It's a 6-meter repeater. You got two 100-amp power supplies, the repeater, the transmitter, the receiver, all in a cabinet. With the duplexers, the antenna. I'm not sure what frequency it's going to be put on yet, but it's going to be, it's 6 meters, it's going to be put up in, I think it's going to be set up in Rocky Hill. It'll be linked to the system out of Rocky Hill, the 147375, I believe, that whole system up there.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. The club I'm president of right now, we have two 440 machines, a 220 machine, a 2-meter machine. We got another machine out east in the Selden Farmingville area, which we're currently working on. That's another 440 machine, so that brings up the three 440 machines. So, we're working on it little by little, you know? And everybody seems to have fun with it.
Yep. There it is. A little bit slow on the take on the tone.
Well, that's all that matters. Repeaters, a lot of these, they're fairly new machines, aren't they? Over the last couple of year add-ons. So I remember in the days when there was just the two machines.
Yeah, well, Club, I'm talking about the little club out in Babylon there, the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club. And Linebox got, I think, a 1.2, a 220, the 2 meter, and their 4-4 machine, and another machine all the way out east, also installed in a 375 machine.
Okay, our club's got the 147, 135, 147, 315, 375, and you've got 146, 955, and there you got the there's two 440 machines, 444, 400, 442, 300, but I don't think that one's linked up. There's a 10 meter machine, which is 29.640. Now the 6 meter machine. And I don't know if the 220 link is still active. And then again with the IRLPs and the Echo Link nodes, as with a EQSO off of the internet.
Yes, no, the IRLP, I tell you, the guys over in my area, we had a lot of guys years ago move down to Florida and stuff, and you know, it was kind of hard to these guys stay in touch with them, miss phone calls, leave messages, this and that. But once we got the IRLP stuff running, it was quite funny because you can hear sometimes late at night or early in the morning they're talking to their friends down in Florida. But anyway. So it looks like it's going to be a nice day. Name is John, by the way.
Okay, John. I think we spoke it before. I used to come down to the area quite often in a tractor trailer. To deliver water out onto the island out there and building material out to Lowe's and Home Depot out in Hafog, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I've spoken to a lot of people. Sometimes it takes me a while to put the call with the name.
Okay, speaking of which, you probably should do that too, shouldn't we? KV1LQN with, let me see if I can screw this up. KQHCB, is that correct? Did I do that right?
Oh, you got the 20 HCB right, but it's a whiskey, not a kilo. That's no big deal. It's, anyway, yes, whiskey too. Holy touch, Charlie Barber Mobile. Trying to make my way up to the good old 135 and get my tired body up onto the expressway.
Yeah, it's rather quiet out here today, but I just, as I was thinking about that, I remember there's no school, so a lot of the teachers and a lot of the guys that would get out here this early in the morning are still home tucked in bed, I would assume.
Yes, that would be correct. Yes. Yes. Yes, my wife is sleeping in this morning. She doesn't have to be in until 8. She's actually a head of a special ed department in a district out here. Unfortunately, she doesn't have the summer off. So, she doesn't work full weeks, though. She works 2 days one week, 3 days the next week, two, then three. Then halfway through the summer, it changes. It goes 3-2, 3-2. But they, she's got mountains of paperwork, man. Woof. But the high school, she probably won't get up till about 11. And the junior high kid will get up about 8:30, 9 o'clock. And annoy the high schooler. I'll get a phone call. I'll be in Manhattan. And all I can do is tell them to cut it out over the phone.
No kidding. Yeah. God bless you. That's my brother just said, God bless you. You're doing a good job over there.
Yeah, thanks, man. Burn the candle at both ends, I tell you. I tell you, you know. Yeah, so fulfill that.